Blog Talk Radio.
It seems like a few blinks of the eyes, and we're in the middle of 2023. Yes, we're in the middle of June, 6 months in, halfway through this year. Where's time going? I have no idea. I'm happy to be living it. You know, times like this make me want to sit back and kind of reevaluate certain things. And the first thing I go to reevaluate and kind of do like a little check-in and see how things are going is the health. The first place I go is to the health. And I'm going to ask, how was your health? When last time you seen your doctor, is there things that you could improve upon, things that could be better? And if they are, hey, do something about them, because realize that the best gift that we ever received was a gift of life and our health and our bodies from our Heavenly Father. And you should be doing all you can to pay him back and show him that you care about it and take a very good care of it. So keep that in mind, and keep also in mind the struggles that you go through in your mind. Those battles aren't yours. Give that to him. Welcome to When Black Men Talk. I'm Mark Elliott, and I've been the host for quite some several times. Just because it's a conversation now, kind of bordered around love, life, and relationships. Things we tend to talk about mix up. And we're going to do the same with this episode here. If you haven't heard, we're into our summer kind of rotation. We kind of take a week off in between shows. We're not doing four shows a month. We're going to do like two a month. Give our chance to kind of enjoy some of the summer and kind of refresh and reboot. That being said, let me check with one Mr. Demon Race Master. Check up, boss. How you feeling? What's been going on? What's the deal, yo? Oh man, is that what? So you don't want to talk to us anymore? That's what it is. You come on, you want to hold back and talk. I know you're gonna blame me for not doing something right. Are you there? Or you're not there. I mean, if you're not there, man, I'm gonna have you dial back in, sir. Hey, DeMarie's call back, bro. I think it's time you get a new phone too, man. Get a new phone because something just ain't working over there, man. Anyway, we're going to kind of keep things rolling here. That's what we do. When I love this part of the liveness of what we do, because things go wrong. And to me, it's not what goes wrong. It's how you handle things when things go wrong. A lot of people want things to be perfect. Nothing's ever perfect. We just do what we do. We keep moving. And just like anything in life, man, when things happen, you find a way to deal with it. That being said, we're going to roll to Mr. Charles, man. It's been a little time since we talked. Brother, how you feeling?
Not too bad. Hanging in, bro. Blessed. And enjoying life right now, man. Looking thanks for what they really are. And knowing that it could be a lot damn worse. So we're pushing through.
Yeah, that's the mindset, man. Because, you know, sometimes we look around our landscape and we look at things that's not happening properly. But we don't sometimes take account of the things that are happening properly. Sometimes we focus more on what is going on than the good things that have happened. Like Mr. Maurice finally getting it right, falling back in. What you got, Mr. Maurice? How you feeling? What's going on, man? Checkup time. What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up?
All right, man. It seems like I get the blame for all this, man. Can you hear me now, man?
Yeah, man.
I didn't hear my mic coming on from your end, so yeah. I was like, the more things change, the more things stay the same, boy. I tell you, man.
If I had to guess,
but,
it's time for you to update your phone, bro. Time to do a little update with that phone.
No, this is a new phone. This is a new phone, bro. Don't do this. Don't do this. It's too early. Oh, man, but I'm doing great, man. Glad to hear from you two. We missed each other last week because we were enjoying the NBA finals. And, good to hear you two. Good to hear you two, man.
Yeah, man, I like this, man. I like the fact that, you know, I love the fact we get together, but I love the fact that we can take a little time to come back together and chop it up a little bit. Like you said, the NBA finals going on. Kind of had to kind of pull you into watching it, man, because, you know, you feel about the NBA. You know, you believe it's a big, you know, conspiracy. But anyway, we're going to kind of move on and stay with the Goon Squad. Oh, you're looking to uncover something. That's my cousin. If there's something out there to be uncovered, Trust me, he's on it. He's on it. He's got his spinning fast. He's going to uncover it.
Sharp-eyed Washington, man.
There you go, bro. I wanted to focus on just right, being right, because it sounds like it's a simple term and a simple thing, but a lot of times it causes damage, especially in our personal relationships. It could be with our loved ones, someone we're involved with. There's something about being right in terms of a relationship. And to me, the pursuit of it do some harm. It could just take the structure and imbalance the relationship. And I'm going to focus this in. I'm going to come to you with this first, Mr. Charles. I'm going to focus it now for the time being and being in a relationship with a significant other, wife, girlfriend, someone of that nature, in a sense, because we find ourselves from time to time, it's inevitable that you're going to find yourself in a conversation, an argument, or something. And to me, it seems like when that happens, either both parties or one party is focused more on trying to be right than actually trying to elevate, understand why the conversation is taking place. So when that happens to me, that does damage. It may not seem like it. It starts to do damage to the structure of a relationship. I wanted to get your response to that, sir.
Man, you must, anyway, let me just say this. I just dealt with this a couple of days ago, literally.
Yes, sir.
Literally.
Yes, sir.
Literally. I'm sitting there going like, and I'm going to have to admit, I sometimes like to be right, but it's not the premise of just being right. It's like if somebody gives you information, take time to understand it before you try to claim it that you're right, okay? If you don't know something, if this is outside your boundary, you're not an expert in it, you don't understand it, think about what you're claiming before you try to act as if you're right. But I've learned this, and I know why perhaps some of my relationships have changed over the years. But I'm better now. I'm better. That no matter how much you may feel about being right in a relationship or with a significant other, some things you just got to let go, bro. Because you're not going to win. I was like, hell with that. You know you're wrong as hell. But you're not going to win. And it's not worth the aggravation and the frustration and the struggle. Sometimes, as they say, you got to let them have that. If it's not that major or whatever, you got to let them have it. And in regards to your question, I think that it can do some damage to the relationship, particularly if it becomes an ongoing pattern. And you know deep down inside that this person, out of the 10 that they're trying to be right, they had a 20% clip. They keep being wrong, and after a while, it's like, why in the hell am I even – I wouldn't call the word dumbing down, but why am I relinquishing what I know to be true? So it can do damage, but sometimes you're going to take some L's, bro. So it can do damage, but at the same time, some things you're just going to have to let go because some people are never, ever going to receive it and let it go that there's a possibility that they could be wrong.
Yeah, I like the word pattern that you use, man. I think that's what happens. If it develops into a pattern where you're seeking to be right, even when you know you're wrong. And part of that is a power thing. It really is. And part of it is a kind of a thing. I want you to know that I'm on top of you. You know, you're not here with me. I'm on top. And it can go into different ways and different branches. But that pattern is what tends to happen. And again, the focus is not on what's really being said, what's being put out, or the scope of the conversation. It trickles into, you know, I want to be right. And from time to time, people are saying things in conversation they know it's not the truth, just to kind of, in their mind, believe they're to win the conversation. Same thing for you, Mr. DeMaurice, you know, the pursuit of happiness, not happiness, the pursuit of being right in the structure of a relationship. Can it bring some harm long term?
Yeah, it can, because I think one of the words you said is the power. The person who wants to be right or has to be right, it seems like they want power in the relationship. It's not about having a harmonious relationship with the person where it's, you know, you could be wrong or you could be flawed in some kind of ways or wrong in your opinions or your thoughts or beliefs at certain times.
It's about, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, and it could damage the relationship because now you're not open to other opinions, other points of view. And then the person who you're, quote unquote, having the power over because you're always right feels that they're not valued in the relationship or their opinions or their worth is not valued because anything they say or do is not looked upon as any value or any importance in that standpoint. So if you're in a relationship and you don't feel important or valued, then why are you in a relationship?
Good stuff there, man. Real good stuff. You know, it's interesting. Feeling right, it has some deepness to it. And part of the reason I believe we strive for it because it affirms and it inflates our self-worth, our self-esteem. It does in a sense to where when you're wrong, you know, you step out and you feel wrong, you kind of tend to deflate some. You don't feel as worthy. You feel like, you know, you just can't. So I believe that's part of the motivation why one seeks to always kind of, you know, want to be right. And especially sometimes one seeks to want to be right to their partner because they don't want themselves to feel or their partner look at them as less than in certain areas. So even if they're not strong in that area, they're pushed to be right to kind of cover up the mere fact that they feel inadequate. So that happens often a lot. I want to come to you with this, Mr. Maurice, because I notice a lot of times in conversations and we have, and it's funny how this to me can turn a conversation on its axle, being defensive. And to me, when you start being defensive to me, in a way, you're showing me, without thinking you're showing me, what I'm saying to you is correct. Because now you're trying to basically take me away from what I'm stating. When you can objectively receive what I'm saying, evaluate it, and bring it back in terms of show, you know, you can show me if I'm wrong. But when you get defensive to me, it's equals to me saying that you're fighting that need to be right. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I look at it that way, and then I look at it as you're trying to hide something or trying to hide a vulnerability or a weakness you feel you have that will expose who you really are or what your intent really is. So when somebody's very defensive, it's almost like you touch upon something that is true that they're trying to keep you from, you know, because when you play defense in sports, you're trying to keep the other person from getting a goal or getting an advantage of you. And so I think, you know, when people get too defensive on certain things, it's like almost like you're in their wheelhouse and they feel like you're going to take something from them or devalue them or not look at them the same way, you know, based on what you're saying or how you're kind of coming to them. So, yeah, being defensive is kind of like guarding something that you feel that you need to have that if you lose it, then you're not going to be that important person or people aren't going to look at you in the same light.
Yeah. I find it interesting that, you know, we say we love each other, we do all this stuff, but yet when it comes to have a conversation, we spend more time trying to play games, be defensive, do all this good off track instead of really honestly focusing on what's going on. That always amazes me. It just does, man. It's like we get into these situations and then we start playing actors and actresses. We start doing this, doing that, don't let you see this. You know, like you said, you know, you don't want to see a person that showing your vulnerability. Then why are you in love? Why be in love? Realistically, why be there? Just for the freebies that comes along with it? Because to me, that's an important part of love that we don't speak about. If I can't be vulnerable or insecure around you and just be who I am, why am I with you? If I don't trust you enough to be able to really just undress myself to you, and I got to keep covering up, putting coats on, hoodies on, and showing you all that, and then I'm not to be with you, and you're not to be with me. I'm going to have you address that, Mr. DeMaurice, in a second, but I want to get Mr. Charles in this one about being defensive, the need to kind of equals to being right. If you want to say, I'm sorry, you said, were you going to say something?
No, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think people sometimes are in relationships for the wrong reason. I mean, some people are in relationships just not to be lonely. And it's not about love. It's not about being in a relationship to share things with. It's not about being in relationships to experience, you know, the other person and how life would be with the other person. It's that you think you should be in a relationship. You think you should be in love. You think you should be all this stuff without really knowing what a relationship is and what it entails and how do you grow it. How do you grow the relationship when you're in the relationship? And when you're defensive and you're acting in that manner, you can never grow the relationship. It's not a relationship. It's almost like a dictatorship. Instead of a relationship, you're dictating everything that's going on in a relationship. That's not a relationship. It's a shared experience. It's sharing. It's loving. It's sharing. It's understanding. It's coming. It's a lot of compromise. So if you're not willing to do that and you're defensive all the time, you're right. You should not be in a relationship.
Yeah, man. Mr. Charles, you know, about the defensive part of it, man, you said you experienced some things in the past few weeks. I love that, man. I love when we could touch on something, man, that's kind of real with us currently, because all the stuff we talk about at one time or another, either we have experienced it or people are experiencing it now, and, you know, we're all the same. You know, we might experience things at different times, but it doesn't mean it doesn't come on your plate at some point. But in the sense of being defensive, is it equal to the need to be right, sir?
I think so, because you look from the standpoint of, I think that a lot of times when people are defensive, you might reach, hit them at a sore spot, something that they're not really, well, they're not ready to deal with. And I think a lot of it is a maturity factor. This might have been something that has taken place and they're still dealing with from a long time ago. And I think part of being defensive for some people is the fact is that they don't want to seem less than, or they don't seem as, don't want to be seen not as an equal. So they have to fight that, because you might hit a spot. And it was mentioned earlier about being in a relationship and doing the things that you need to do in order to let it grow and understanding why you're in it for the right reasons. But some people have not reached that point. And that's hard for a lot of people. I mean, we sit here, we might say, yeah, well, I think we should do this, you should do this in a relationship. But, man, some of this stuff goes way back to people dealing with childhood issues or whatever it may have been. And it might just be some life psychological things that, although they may want to move forward and do all the things that a relationship requires, hell, they're not capable. So they might need some counseling. They might do some self-evaluation. It sounds good that they should, but got to be all honest, man. A lot of people deal with a lot of things that does not allow them to step forward as it's been spoken here. And that's why a lot of times you see people are very defensive on certain issues.
Now, I hear you, man. And I agree with you, but then you're not ready to be in love. Then you're not, you know, if you're not you've not dealt with those issues, and you spoke of maturity, if you haven't matured yourself around it, then don't play the game of love. I'll take the word game out. Don't play with love. You're not. Then you're in it for the wrong reasons. You're in it for the freebies or what, like Mr. DeMaurice said about being lonely. You're looking for companionship. You're not ready for it. And realistically, you know what you're ready for and you're not. You can try to sell it to yourself that you are. You should tell the other person straight up front, this is what I'm dealing with, and allow them to basically choose whether they want to basically honor you or not, in a sense. But we spend more time in relationship worrying about, you know, somebody going to cheat on me and this and that, how they're going to be good to me, they're going to take me out, all that BS stuff, when we're not ready. A lot of us aren't ready. We're still hanging on to, like you said, stuff that happened that hasn't been dealt with, but then you're not ready to move on. And then what happens, you put yourself with someone that might be ready, or they may not be ready either. Now you two banging heads and nothing's getting done, and there's a lot of drama and stuff that's going on. That's not meant to be in an adult, mature, loving relationship. So we sit back and we wonder sometimes why it doesn't work. It's a good part of it. Getting back to about being right, actively listening. Man, wow. Let me just give that a second. Actively listening. Observing what verbal and nonverbal messages are being sent. Here's the key, though. Then providing appropriate feedback. Now, to me, again, when you get defensive and you start throwing a curve, that's not appropriate feedback. It's not. It really isn't. Active listening is listening on or with a purpose. Now, for me, listening in general, active, non-active, to me, has great value, Mr. Charles. It just does. It's just, to me, it's huge when it comes to a relationship. On so many levels. So if a person is not basically valuing or actively listening, how vital can it be for a relationship for you, sir?
It can be very, very important because of the fact that some people, they just talk and they don't, I think they either, it's a psychological thing where they talk and they don't understand that they miss whatever a person is saying. You ever been in a situation where you're talking and somebody jump right in, and they jump right in without even acknowledging what you're saying, and you haven't even done with your point, and they just keep going on and on. They didn't go, oh, they don't even stay to the point where, oh, I'm sorry, let me let you finish. They just throw you out the way, and they just keep moving, talking about what they talked about, which means they're not listening to you. So over the years, I've tried to evolve, which I have a lot, where I just literally sometimes I'm just super, I don't say anything. I'm just quiet. I listen to the point where the maid or my maid or the person that I'm in a relationship with will go, you're not going to say nothing? I'm like, damn, I'm listening. Can I have a few moments to process what you're saying so I can give an appropriate response? Sometimes you get ridiculed when you're really trying to understand where the person's coming from and really trying to process it. And if you don't hit the buzzer real quick like you're on a damn game show, you get ridiculed for that. So, the listening part is very important because that allows you to give a conscious answer after you thought about it a little bit, which can really be helpful to the person if they give you enough time to evaluate what has been said.
Mr. Charles, man, it's been a few days for you, huh, bro? It's been a few days for you?
Dude, I'm just saying, man. Sometimes this show is probably the only time that I really get a chance to share this with other people. So while it might be a little bit personal with me, I'm trying to help y'all too. Listen, if you listen to this, you know what I'm talking about. You feeling me? Send a comment and let me know I'm not the only one. I know a lot of y'all out there listening know what the hell I'm talking about. I might just be a little bit more forceful with the way that I'm saying it, and I can get to a smaller and gentler kind of voice that works for you as well, to whatever you need for me to do. But the whole premise of this is to recognize what I'm saying and understand it, that this could be affecting you as well. Thank you.
Yeah, man, I it's amazing because to me, when a person realizes they're not being heard, they're going to start to feel they're not being valued. I mean, Mr. Reese kind of spoke of this earlier, but realistically, when you start to feel that the person is not really listening to you, you're going to start to think, oh, do they value me enough to listen? They don't think what I'm saying is worthy enough to pay attention to. These are the thoughts that are going to start to formulate in your mind, and you really start to think, okay, what's going on here? And you're right. When you're speaking to someone and they basically jump in and turns the conversation again, it's like, how could you have been listening? How could you listen? Or, you know, you speak or they speak and you don't even get to your period and they're basically denouncing everything you just said. They're just And don't denounce it with, you know, here's why. It's just, no, that's not, uh-uh. So it's like, yeah, to me, active listening to Mr. Demi Reese, it has a lot of value. I don't think it's used properly. But with that being said, how do you value in terms of relationship that you may experience or you may want to be in?
When you're not listening to somebody and what they're saying, it shows the person who is speaking that what they're saying and who they are is not important. And so it just shows a disrespect. And I have to really be careful doing this because sometimes when somebody is speaking, I anticipate where they're going to try to answer the question. And I know for me, sometimes I'll jump the gun and start speaking. It's almost like I'm speeding up so I can, you know, I can answer the question. And I've seen that happen to me. So I have to say I've done this, you know, on occasion. But it reminds me of, I had a colleague a while back who was saying she was talking to her child and she was laying on the couch. The child was very small. And she was laying on the couch. She wasn't really listening to the child. And the child was talking. They had their eyes closed and they were laying on the couch and they weren't really paying attention to what the child was saying. They were just responding, yeah, okay, uh-huh, uh-huh. And all of a sudden, she said she felt a hard wooden toy up against her head. That the child realized that you're not really listening to me. So they cracked. I mean, it was a young son cracked her up beside the head. Like, you know, you're not listening to me. You know, I'm here. I'm saying this, but you're really not listening. And she said it made me aware that I wasn't listening to my child. And that I needed to pay, not only just lay there and listen, but look them in the eye, acknowledge that I'm listening to them, and acknowledge that they are important. What they're saying and what they're doing is important. And sometimes I think some of us need that wooden toy, you know, upside our head to really, when you're active listening, you're engaged, you're not on your phone, you know, you're not distracted with something else. You're engaged, you're looking the person in the eye, you're listening to understand, not to just respond to what's going on. And so I think a lot of us need to learn that lesson. I know some of us get off the beaten path because sometimes life is moving fast. You want to get things done. You got a lot of things on your mind. But when you're active listening, you are removing all distractions and you're in tune to that person and you're looking at them eye to eye with nothing else to distract you, and you're absorbing what they're saying in order to give a response that is appropriate or a response that you have let them know that I understand what you're saying. Here's what I'm feeding you back.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, I agree with that. I like that story, too, I'm popping up against the head, because if a kid can realize, for the most part, you're not paying attention, imagine, you know, elevate him to an adult quickly, same thing. You feel it when you're basically saying something to someone and they're, for the most part, not interested, not actively listening, not interested. They really aren't. But, you know, they'll play like they are, but they don't have a care. Not realistic. They don't have a care. I'm going to throw this question back at you, Mr. DeMaurice, and it could sound a little crazy. But here's a word that over the years has translated itself into almost being a boogeyman, so to speak. Submitting. And for me, you know, I think we don't totally understand the word itself. I think it was misplaced. I think it's been misguided to where for a lot of people it means a lot of different things. But I think when it's done correctly and when it should be done, I think it's a beautiful thing. But I want to turn it around to this, because I think sometimes submitting plays a role in actively listening for the person that needs to submit, the person that's hoping the person submit to them. So with that being said, is active listening a part of submitting?
I can see that where that could be the case, because basically I think people sometimes feel that submitting, you're weak, that when you submit, you're weak, and that there's a meaning that goes with that. But you're submitting to your particular partner. You're letting them know that, you know, they're important. Their words are something that you want to hear. That you're giving a commitment. You're submitting to what they're saying. You're submitting to, hey, this person is very important, and whatever they have to say, what can I do to make it better? What can I do to help this person? What can I do to be a benefit? And in that way, when you're submitting, you're being a benefit to your partner. I think it's a good thing, because you want to be there to help. You want to be a helpmate. You want to be somebody that is constructive in the relationship instead of destructive in the relationship. And so if you're holding this power struggle to say, no matter what, I'm going to hold power over this person, and I'm not going to let them see, the warm and fluffy side of me, or I'm not going to see them, let them see me in a weak position. You're not giving of yourself. So I think submitting is giving of yourself to the point where you're a benefit to your partner or in the relationship, than just holding back and just being so restrictive that nothing is getting done and you're not progressing in the relationship.
Mr. Charles, actively listening plays a part in submitting, sir?
I think it does, because I think part of that listening, when you think about submitting, it means that when you actively listen, you are literally, you value what the person is saying, right? You value what they say. Therefore, that's part of being understanding your mate and submitting. Like, oh, wow, yeah, maybe they may be right about this. And maybe they do have my best interest at heart, which is supposed to be part of a relationship in most normal situations. Also, too, another word I want to throw out is trust. You trust that they have your best interest, and they're going to provide you with information and share some things that matter that can only benefit you and benefit the relationship. A lot of people, I don't think, they don't trust their significant other or what they're saying to have their best interest at hand, or again, for the relationship. So I think those two words, you value what some person says, you also trust them, what makes it easier for a person to listen, and which is part of the whole scenario of submitting.
We're speaking about being right in terms of a relationship, or the pursuit of being right in terms of a relationship. It's One Black Man Talk. I'm Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles, Mr. Demaryius. We get together and hold conversations based around love, relationship, and life. And this is what we're kind of speaking on today. I want to thank folks for giving us an ear, picking up some people in different locations of the United States. Man, Indianapolis, I see you. Other people are checking in and waking up to what we're doing, and I appreciate it. We all appreciate it, and we're going to continue on doing as such. And I'm listening to these two gentlemen, their response. And it's interesting because I think for the most part, people have an idea that when it comes to love, men just don't want to be in it. You know, they don't really want to deal with it, that we're basically all just chasing draws and we don't desire love. But I don't think what they understand is that we don't give our love away easy. Don't. It's something that basically, I'm not saying you have to earn, but we kind of pick and choose sometimes where our love go. And if it's not being valued, you know, if it's not being honored, why should we be there? Why should we be there? So, and that's one thing I like about what we do here, because we show, and we're not even trying to, but we could take a topic like this and show many different dynamics of it that reside in us. And if you don't have a conversation or you don't spend time with a person, you may not think they possess. They have it. And here again, the common thought is men just basically, for the most part, we're out here trying to collect and do all that and build that. But no, men want to be in a good, healthy, loving relationship. We, you know, that's the desire. But we're not going to wake up every day and pursue it when we don't see it out there. And most of us are not going to put ourselves in bad ones and just kind of live in it just to say we're in one. That sounds like desperation to me. Another part of basically right term, being a right term relationship, in any discussion, argument, anything of that nature, we personally, and I heard you say this to an extent earlier, Mr. Charles, have to own our mistakes. We have to own our mistakes, man. That accountability can't get away from it. You have to humble yourself. Owning your mistakes, taking responsibility for your part is a way to de-escalate what's going on. Now, what I've noticed many times, man, I've experienced many times, I've experienced it, I've seen with other people, is that during a conversation, people will say things in their, sometimes just throw out stuff, again, that may not be true, or just try to do what it is, gameplay in a sense, try to win and try to be right. But even if they realize they weren't right, they will not come back. They might realize it during or after. They won't come back and humble themselves, Mr. Charles, and speak to that role and saying things. They'll continue on and let all the BS that they might have put out there just kind of linger. Why is that?
I think you were said earlier, the word I want to use is they don't want to seem as they are weak, right? Weak or inferior. So therefore, it takes a very strong person to admit when you're wrong. It takes a very strong person to be able to own when you're incorrect, or even when you're to a point you may not even understand something. Because sometimes we say things that we think we're right, and then somebody, like a mate or whatever, may come back and point something out to us. And it's not like they're trying to tear you down. It might even be used as an educational moment. Just kind of say, all right, remember next time, this is what we're looking at. But, yeah, getting back to the point, a lot of people don't want to seem as weak and inferior. And then they feel like by either issuing or recognizing that they were incorrect, makes them weak, or might seem more like an apology than more than anything.
Yeah, don't apologize. Don't. Never apologize. Never, ever, 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 ever apologize. Don't do that. It's not good for you. It's not good for your relationship. It's not good for your mate. Do not apologize. Just avoid it at all costs. Never, ever, ever, ever apologize. Mr. DeBreach, taking responsibility only for your part in an argument, a conversation, basically, to me, should be a natural, beautiful thing. It allows both of you to grow, allows the relationship to breathe, allows the relationship to grow. So why is it that basically when that happens, people avoid coming back, like not wanting to apologize, own up to their role, not humbling themselves? What is that?
I think it's looked upon as it weakens a person's status. People want to feel important or feel like they have a certain status. And when you're at that particular level, you don't want to be looked upon as imperfect, or that what you're saying is not right. And sometimes it's very hard to kind of face and own up to. So they look, if you do see a chink in their armor, if you do see that that they're wrong on certain things, they may feel like, okay, since they're seeing me this way, it may lower my status or lower what people think of me. We got a clown now who can't stop running his mouth, and he's getting himself in more and more trouble because he's trying to keep the status that everybody, well, a lot of us know that he doesn't have, but he's trying to keep the status. And you know, we see all the chink in his armor. And it's making him look even more foolish, trying to keep this status, trying to continue to lie about certain things. And that you can see that is the most important thing to him. And it's almost like if he feels he doesn't have the status, that he is less than everybody else. So it's almost like you feel weak because you're trying to keep the status. And you will die with this lie or die not admitting that you are wrong in order to keep this a status or keep this feeling of importance that you feel that everybody should see you as. and it's a dangerous thing. It's actually comical when you see a person not own up to their, own up to things that they did wrong, or own up to, hey, I was wrong in this particular situation, or I misspoke, or things of that sort. If you just apologize and moved on, people will forget it. But now this person who is dead set on keeping this status, regardless of the way it's looking and regardless of the truth, it's becoming comical, and this is what this person is going to be recognized and known for. And they don't realize that they're making it worse every time they open their mouth, every time they're trying to reinforce something that was wrong, that everybody knows that's wrong. And it's just comical now. It's just comical just to see it, and that they're sinking lower and lower and lower. And now truly the status is going down because you fail to realize your role in it, your responsibility, and now you look like you are looking like the fool that you really are.
Mr. Charles, when someone basically won't come back and humble themselves to what they should, what is kind of plain and obvious to them, and then go around it, we don't think of the other party. Does the other party start to lose trust in them some?
I can see that, but I think also I think you just kind of see it as a major flaw. I do. And granted, like you said, maybe they're not ready for the relationship, but I think you pay close attention to see, again, coming back to the point whether or not this is a pattern, because it could be something down the line to look at. And granted, easier said than done. You know, maybe some people say, hey, point out to them, maybe they're open to growing from that. But more likely, they're not. But, you got to look at that. You got to look at that with a very close eye. Because you're going to go, is this who I really want to be with, and are they capable of, as you mentioned earlier, reaching the plateau, what we need to have a great and positive relationship?
Yes, sir. Mr. DeMaurice, again, same for you, sir. That unhumbleness, that where they just kind of avoid it, fear, but don't want to kind of really relay it back to someone, does that start to whittle away at the trust some?
Yeah, because, you know, if the person is wrong on this, what else have they been wrong about? What else are they, how far are they willing to kind of keep this lie going? How far will they go to prove that they're right and you're wrong, even though you know they're in the wrong? So how can you trust anything else that they're coming with? And how can you trust their judgment? How can you trust that they're seeing things and, you know, the reality of certain situations? Is it that important for you to be right that you will not see the truth in a situation? So how do you trust that? You can't trust that. You can't trust it. So, you know, it does wear down on a relationship. It does wear down on how you can really kind of really trust this person. And when you can't trust somebody, you know, what's the point of even being with them?
Look out. We're going to roll to our questions now. Mr. Charles, your first question for this episode, sir.
Yes, my first question is, and I know, anyway, I just had a birthday not too long ago, but it's not even really focused on that. But my question is, as you get older or we get older, are you amazed by the way, are you able to really understand how society is truly changing? And what I mean by that is certain times when we were growing up or even as we were young adults, there were certain standards and certain things that, you know, for religion, certain things people had to follow a protocol, like, if you're Muslim, you don't do this, you don't do that. If you have somebody else outside of the Muslim faith or whatever, there were certain standards about how women dressed or how children dressed, and you didn't let this happen. And now, to me, it seems as if those things have been really laxed, or they're not as stringent as they were back in the day. And that's okay, but I'm just saying, as maturing adults, is this a pattern that you are observing and seeing for yourself?
I think change is a part of growth as we move on through life and things happen. How much you want to change, how drastic you change is totally up to one's choice, but I think that's what we see. I think sometimes we hang on to certain things that we knew that was good, and some things we just change from, we modify, make adjustments to. So I think over a period of time that just happens, man. I think it's a kind of natural order of things in a sense. And probably what we didn't realize when we were younger, some of the things that we kind of saw, there were changes that may have took place before we saw the other parts. But yeah, change is change comes. It just happens, man. It's just that, again, how much of a change are you going to make and how much that change take you away from your foundation? Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, with me, I gotta really constantly avoid trying being the grumpy dude or the grumpy old man kind of thing, because I know how things should work. I know how things should be, and then when I see it not being done, it's like it irks me a certain way. So here's an example, real quick example. I was always taught, especially by my mother, that when you're walking with a woman down the street, she walks on the inside of you. And when I see guys walking with their lady or walking with women on the street, I see them walking on the inside of them. It bothers me. And I got to avoid not being bothered by that, because like everybody didn't grow up and raised the way I was raised, but it's like certain standards that I think we should have as men, and a certain standard that I knew I grew up with and that it was common knowledge. It's not common knowledge to a lot of people, and it seems to irk me. So when I see it, it's like I'm taking more time to think about it and stew about it than I should. Because it's really none of my business what other people do, but it's just certain standards that I have or certain standards that are out there, certain things that I feel should be, and I know I got to get off of that sometimes, that, you know, seem to irk me that I grew up with this. This should be common knowledge. How come everybody else is not doing this? And so every chance I get, I let people know about that. And I've seen this from a younger lady that I was walking down the street with, and she was like, wow, she's like, you're really a gentleman, because a lot of men don't know about this. Women know about it, but guys don't know about it. And it sometimes it irks me.
Real quick on that note, man, a lot of men don't do that because they don't care about her.
Yeah.
They just don't care. It's a sign of not caring. And I agree with you, things like that you kind of pick out, you notice, but I really do. I think a lot of times men don't care. These men with these younger ladies, they don't care. They don't value you. They really don't. And some of these ladies should be picking up on that. I mean, and realistically, yeah, we were taught that. I don't think I was taught that. I just kind of picked up on that on my own. But that reminds me of a real quick scene of a movie where, you know, that guy, we all go back to that guy, told the young man, you pick her up, basically, leave your door locked. Open
yeah.
her door. Put her in.
Bronx tail.
If she doesn't
yeah.
reach, yeah, yeah. If she doesn't reach in and open your door, she's selfish. So if a young man basically is throwing you to the curve and he's walking, protecting himself, see it for what it is. I mean, don't go back and say his mom, but then he just doesn't feel that way about you. He may not feel that way about any woman. But, you know, that sometimes it is what it is. Mr. Charles, your response to your question, sir.
Yeah, I'm kind of like DeMaurice. I'm trying to not become that grumpy old man, but I have to have a private session where I just kind of think about some of that stuff, but I can't release it. Because I'll be like, man, that's stupid. Is they okay? Y'all see what's happening? And I go, yeah, let it go. Because, like, for instance, with the parents in allowing younger people to dress certain kind of ways, right? And I'm sitting there, especially with girls. You see the girls with not a lot of clothes on and whatnot. And, oh, she's cute. She's beautiful. She's this, she's that. And I'm like, do you realize the message that you're sending, one, to her, two, to the world who's watching? And the fact that she's 12. She's 12. Do you realize what you're presenting to her? And how's that going to come out the rest of the way? And then what if, because she's 12, you're allowing her to dress a certain kind of way, and a man approaches her some kind of way, and you're not around, and you don't know what the hell is going to happen? Do you realize, understand the ramifications that could happen because of what you allow her to do? And she has no recourse to understand what to deal with, how to do deal with the situation that is. Anyway, that's my moment. Thank y'all.
We've all seen that, man. We've all seen, you know, younger women dressed. And I always say to myself when I see that, okay, they don't have a job. They don't work. So what adult probably bought this for them and thought it was okay? And thought this was okay. This is what you want to ship them out as. So that's always been, to me, my thought process. And I even think so, too. I remember shopping for my daughter years ago, and I go out, and you look at some of the stuff they have for these 8-10-year-olds to put on. I'm like, what designer is designing this in mind for these little young ladies to put this shit on? And then you get the cuckoo moms that think it's a great idea, or dad. But it's like, even that, some of the stuff that's designed for that age is just like, what the hell? Your question, Mr. DeMarais.
All right, 43-year-old Khalees said, you know, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. 72-year-old Bill Murray said, I'm getting that milkshake. You got Al Pacino in his 80s having a baby with a 29-year-old. Robert De Niro, 79, having a baby with his... What the hell's going on, man? What is going on? What's going on? What's happening? Somebody put out a memo that, you know, I just want y'all comments on this because I think it's a good thing. I hate if you could do it at 70 something, you know, I got a pop, you know, 80, still doing this thing. I ain't hating. I'm just trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Well, you ain't got to try to figure too hard if you ask me, bro. I mean, in those three cases that you presented, the older gentleman, well-established. Now, I'm a big fan of Bill Murray, but Bill Murray, looked like a 10-year hangover, bro. Point blank, a hangover for 10 years. So, Khalees, you know, what is their, you know, any form of attraction? And I'm not saying they may not bond with each other, but the establishment of these gentlemen, where they're established in life, financially, where it can help you be more established in life financially. Because when a young woman of 20-some-odd years old decide to give her body, her uterus, and bring a child to this world that's going to be with her for the rest of her years, what goes behind that? To a cat that may not, you know what I mean? Here it is. It's nothing new. It's nothing new. It's nothing new. It's just that because of the media world we live in now, social media is projected more at you. It's been going on for years, bro. Nothing new. But it's the same old thing. It's the financial security, the establishment of the male offer was reversed to the woman. You know, you know, I think Gladys Knight dates a younger cat, if I'm not mistaken, much younger than her. You know, and I'm not saying it was never love, whatever, but let's just look at some areas. It's just come real. I mean, I threw out the fact you two about Martha Stewart being on the cover. Y'all lost your mind. Like, no. So I'm going to leave that right there. So but it is.
That's different.
What you got, Mr. Charles, your response, sir?
Man, I hell. I'm torn on this one because you're talking about that car. I'm going to give me a GoFundMe page or something so I can make sure I ask the people to pay for what I can't pay for. But, you know, I think it's still a chance for me. You know what I'm saying? It's still a chance for me when I see that's going on. I was like, okay, then my GoFundMe going to take care of their financial situation. But I ain't mad at them. Much love to Pops. Pops, do your thing, baby. I'm living vicariously through you. living vicariously.
Hall of Fame.
But no doubt, no doubt. But the Telus and the Bill Murray thing, I mean, it's weird and it's a little different for me. But also, too, what I really looked at, and I might be totally reaching in left field on this, there might be something there because I read something where, you know, she lost her husband, right, younger guy, and I might be tripping off of this. And Bill Murray lost his wife. There might be something where he might be, in a way, counseling, consoling, whatever, however you're using it to do whatever. She might just need some damn body to really understand what she's going through. I might be totally off on that. I don't know that. I'm not with them. But in the wildest situations, just real quick, people reach out for certain things they need that they may not get from anybody else that don't make a lot of damn sense. People do that, and this might be one of them scenarios. But then again, they might just want to kick you. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
That's a good possibility. I can see that if that's the case. You know, that is, you know, more than welcome. And if that is something that they're both bringing to each other, regardless of whatever other things going on, excuse me, I can. But I will say this. There's some guys out there, you know, his age, they lost their wife too. She have given them a possibility. If they didn't have their wealth of a Bill Murray. Because she can find a guy at the Veterans Hospital that may have lost his wife, but she give him an opportunity. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, you know, when I saw Robert De Niro, you know, it reminded me of the movie he was in, Old Grandpa. If you ever seen that movie, it's one of the funniest movies out there, where he's going back and forth, and I'm not going to give the movie, but he's going back and forth with this younger lady who's real hilarious. And she was just into him. When I saw Al Pacino, I'm like, okay, yeah, I see it. But this kind of threw me off a little bit because I didn't see this one coming. I just did not see this one coming. Maybe because Bill Murray is a comedian. And, I always just see him in this funny light. I couldn't imagine what he did to put the Mac down to get Khalees. <My mind. laughs> But I am not mad. I am not mad. Not at all. You know, do your thing, man. I mean, she put the milkshake out there, guys. Any one of us could have went out and got the milkshake in the yard. And Bill Murray stepped up, and he got that milkshake. Salute to you, sir. Salute. 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 Put everything in your mama name. If your mama's still living, put everything in your mama name. Keep it pushing.
Oh, I know you didn't say that. Oh, man. I'm going to do this real quick. 30 seconds. If you had to pull somebody that kind of represents you, pull a celebrity and somebody for your family member that kind of make up your personality, who it would be? 30 seconds to you, Mr. Charles.
Oh, man. You have to. I don't really understand that question. Don't do my research so I can understand it. I need a little time, about 12 seconds to understand it.
I can't come up with no 30 seconds of a person.
Man, so y'all got to be ready to go, man. We throw the curveball. Anyway, I'll go with mine real quick. Maybe two of y'all can come up in 15 seconds. But anyway, I look at myself as a slash of Jackie Gleason and one of my uncles that passed on, Uncle Robbie. It's like, man, sometimes I look at my personality, I'm like, damn, if I don't kind of play the role of those two. Now, that being said, if you two can come up with something, you can. I understand. I mean, sometimes the curveball, you swing and you miss. What you got, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, well, one is my dad, man. I'm still aspiring to be like my pop. Man, my pop is smooth as hell, bro. Smooth as hell. And the other one, too, would probably be somebody that only have to work hard, even though he's just cool because of who he is. That's Denzel, bro. That, bro, he ain't got to say nothing. He just got to talk and just hold himself the way he does, you know, keep himself together. And women just, like, flock to that dude. He just speaks, and they just love Denzel. So that's what I'm working on.
There you go, Mr. Charles. You took about a minute. Give 20 seconds to you, DeMaurice. Hit it, sir.
I got to go with my dad, and then I got to go with Sidney Poitier. I got to go with that. That's my dude. That is my dude there. Sidney Poitier and his philosophy in life. Yeah. Got
to
go.
There it is. To the moon, Alice. Here we go. We'll get together in about 2 weeks to do it again. It's when blackness talks. Stay black in the meantime. Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott, Mr. DeMaurice. Y'all take care of yourself. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.